Hello, and welcome to Presenting, a podcast where we chat about various topics related to role-playing games, typically Paizo products such as Pathfinder and Starfinder, but also others. I'm John Godek, and with me today is Ivis K. Flanagan. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
No, it's awesome. I've seen you online, and we've chatted, at various conventions, but we've never talked in person, I don't think. Have we?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I don't think so either. So this is great. This is one of the things I enjoy about doing these is I get to meet people virtually that I've only read virtually. So this is good. Well, so Ivis is the venture captain for the Great Lakes region, and she's also the PaizoCon organizing committee chair. Is that right?
Coordinator.
For this year? Coordinator for this year. She's a 5-star Pathfinder GM, a Pathfinder Starfinder freelance author, a huge Disney fan, and just last week, her Starfinder scenario, 4-112, a festive operation released just in time for the holidays and just in time for me to play it, which I will be playing the day that this podcast gets posted. So I'm very excited about that. So, Ivis, can you tell us about your involvement with organized play and how you got started from, just playing into now being a venture captain and organizing what's arguably our coolest convention, PaizoCon?
Okay. Well, honestly, a lot of it is seeing the people who were running things locally. I am really grateful that the person who's in charge of Gen Con, Heather Vigil, was my venture lieutenant when I started playing, and then I watched her step into venture captain and step into the role with Gen Con. And through watching her and working with her on things, I got brave enough to say, hey, I think I can run games, I think. And she worked with me to help find a VA position, which then I ended up in a VL position for my city. Now I'm venture captain for Great Lakes because we are trying to stay hybrid. And so because of my experiences with PaizoCon and PAX Online and headquarters at Gen Con and things like that, I've gotten a lot of digital knowledge just through the last 2 years of needing to learn it. And so my position within Great Lakes is kind of the, hey, we need help with doing online stuff for our local stores. So anyone within the region who needs help is sent to me to be like, okay, what can I do to support you? What resources do you need? Who do I need to contact, get you in contact with type thing? Mm-hmm. And then getting into PaizoCon was because a few years ago when Paizo was still at sponsoring at Origins, I was invited to be on that committee just because I'm insane. And when they did the when they did the P2 playtest, I was basically the please, sir, can I have some more? I was on the team for the playtest demos at Origins and Gen Con. And at Origins that year, I did my shifts and we got to Sunday and I had no games I was signed up for. So I went to the headquarters people and I was like, hey, do you need anybody? And they're like, yes, yes. And so I ended up running more of it and got to talking to with them afterwards. And then a few weeks later, I was offered the opportunity to serve on their committee the next year. And it's kind of snowballed from there. Lands me at PaizoCon.
Yeah, so basically you volunteer a little and they keep making or asking you to volunteer more and more and more. Is that what it's how it goes?
Basically, yes.
Hey, as long as you keep coming back and asking for more, they're happy to have you? Okay.
That's basically how it's come out. Yeah.
So what about becoming a venture captain though? So that's a little bit different than all these organized committees for the cons and stuff.
Yeah, that is honestly by virtue of A, my experience with online, and B, the just amount of time that I've been doing the volunteering as a whole. So I've been GMing for almost 5 years, and I've been a venture officer for 4 of that-ish, I think.
So just surviving that long, you're saying, is how you got there?
Between surviving that long and wanting to step into more.
Yeah.
And that's a
big being
part
active,
of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, not only that, like, I know people who are venture agents or venture lieutenants who are like, I don't want more. And so they've made it clear to those higher up. They're like, no, I like what I do. I absolutely love running games or organizing small things locally, but I don't want more. And so that's part of it, too, is just not only doing it and being around, but also saying, you know what, I want to do more.
You know, so recently on the PaizoCon blog, they announced some recruiting for, I'm sorry, on the Paizo blog, they announced recruiting for PaizoCon 2022 for 3 positions: online department head, on-site department head, and overnight online HQ department head. So they put an extra couple of words in that last one. Can you talk about what these positions are? Because as we were chatting beforehand, they're a little different than what I expected.
Yes. So basically, those 3 positions are, they are committee members, but they're committee members who have a very distinct focus. So myself, David Peaver, and Mike Bramnick are the chairs for the event. And so while Mike is in charge of online and David is in charge of on-site, and then I'm kind of the person making sure everything works together, the 3 of us are the ones at the top who it's like, if something bad happens, we're the ones who have to answer for it. What we're recruiting for is, because PaizoCon traditionally has been on-site and that's it, and then online the last 2 years by virtue of COVID, going into this year, we are working to make it a hybrid event, and we want to involve and give the opportunity for as many people, for players to participate as possible. The plan as of right now is that the online portion is going to be 24-hour gaming again. So because we're doing that, we need somebody who overnight, while we go to sleep, is able to be like, nope, I'm in charge. Unless something really bad happens and I have to wake one of them up, we've got this. That's thusly the overnight person who will be in charge of the show overnight unless something really bad happens and they need to pull in one of us. The on-site and online person, they are basically going to work directly with the committee chair of that side to do any planning and putting it together before the show. And the big thing with these 3 positions is, instead of them being just during the event, like you would be if you're a headquarters volunteer or a game master, these positions have expectations of meetings and work before and possibly after the event in order to make things run smoothly for the players and volunteers at the actual event.
And what kind of stuff do you expect they would be doing then? I understand the meetings for organizing. So is it going to be like managing all the Warhorn signups for the online and the Discord, or managing all the volunteers, you know, in the main convention room and organizing the subrooms and stuff for the in person? Or I guess, what do you know specifically how it's going to break down from what the main coordinator does and what these department heads do?
Part of it, we're going to talk with whoever takes the position on what they are strong with and weak with. As far as handling Warhorn assignments and things like that, the big part of that is going to fall on us and Alex Badal, as far as getting it set up and anything with like polling who's got a membership and things like that. All the pre-stuff will come to us, and then we'll forward them what they need. during the show online would be directing their crew of HQ volunteers for, okay, we need to do this, we need to do that. On site, the same thing. It's going to be, they're going to be the one who, during their shifts, any volunteers are reporting to them so that we are more flexible to be able to support on site and say, whichever one of the three of us is on duty is able to, if needed, jump in online and be more flexible. So that person is kind of more of a face during the show. And then as far as those back end pieces, some of that is definitely going to be ours, and some of it we're going to hand off to them and give to divide up the responsibility. But in part, because we don't know who's going to end up in those positions and what their strengths versus weaknesses are, we haven't 100% defined what that expectation is going to be, because part of it's going to be based on who that person ends up being.
Yeah, I was talking to Nicole Heitz about some of these sorts of things before, and you know, getting involved in conventions. I'm really interested in doing more of the HQ stuff. And so when I saw these, I thought these were for the positions that you and Mike and David are filling. And so I thought, oh yeah, this is like, I need to work HQ and do a whole lot more before I'm willing to jump in on that. In real life, I've done administration for longer than a lot of our players have been alive. But online, you know, this, how the specifics of the conventions work, I only know it from a, from the GM standpoint, you know, having gone to, I don't know, probably 25 conventions over the last 2 years. So now that I, you've told me this, I'm going to rethink applying for these. So to see how that goes. So that's great. It's great to get more clarity on that. So
I was just going to, I was going to say also later this year, well, not this year, because it's almost the end of the year. I'm thinking year in terms of convention seasons. Yeah. But in a month or so, applications for these positions end at the beginning of January, at which point we're going to go through. Alex is going to take the positions, scrub people's information from them, and hand them to us so that we're looking at the applications blind with no names attached. Sure. And we're going to go through those to have a transparent look through to determine, based on qualifications and applications, not people's names, who we think is going to be the best fit for those positions. After that, the call for vols is going to come out, which is where, if you want to do HQ or any, definitely HQ, if you want a GM, possibly a couple other things, those are going to be in that position. So if you're not wanting to take on, oh my gosh, I'm one of the big people leading the whole thing, I'm one of this, but I still want to get my foot into HQ and I want to learn those things, that application process is going to be coming out January or February.
Right. Yeah, typical timeline before PaizaCon and stuff. So
yep.
Okay, good. Yeah. And that part I understood, and that's actually kind of what I was waiting for. These roles are different than what I expected, and now I have to reevaluate my availability and skill set to see. I would very much love to go to PaizaCon in person this year. Unfortunately, I had a kidney transplant a year and a half ago, and I'm immunocompromised. So because of all these variants that keep coming around, my transplant team is not allowing me to go to large conventions as of yet. So I just don't know, like, my status for Memorial Day. And so to commit to a big online thing, I can't do that so far in advance, because I literally won't know probably until right before if I can actually do it. So, I mean, in person thing, I don't know if I'll be able to do it. Speaking of which, can you talk about how the pandemic has affected organized play in what you do in the Great Lakes region and at these various conventions that have gone hybrid, basically?
A lot of impact. we've seen, like, origins. We've seen our support for now dwindle out, and we brought up Concurrent. Hopefully, once we're back in person, there's a local team who's bounced the idea of hopefully being able to support Origins again locally. The the rest of it has been very, okay, let's learn these tools so that we can keep our players going, so that we can keep people going. And as far as my position within the Great Lakes, that's how I ended up being a venture captain, is in mm-hmm. order to allow for more of that hybrid support at a local level. People who want to be online all the time and exclusively online have the online region and the OPO server, and we do not want to take from them at all. And there are players who have said, you know what, you guys are probably better served by the online region. However, mm-hmm. as you said, we keep having all these variants pop up. Mm-hmm. And we are now in a world where it's like, okay, this week it might be okay to be in person, but next week we may need to shift online, and we are learning how to be fluid with that. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where my position as venture captain is right now, is how do I help people stay fluid? How do we work that to keep that local level game, but we may have to jump online for a few weeks to keep people safe. And mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. supporting the rest of my region in just keeping that ability for locals to still play with their other locals as things progress and regress.
Yeah, that's a tough balance. In the Seattle area, we very much follow kind of a hybrid format. And, you know, there we actually have a couple venues that are in person. And then, you know, within 10 miles away, there's other venues that are basically, they've gone online. Same people, right? Same people might play in both, actually. But there's just the folks that are not comfortable with in person, like myself, for a variety of reasons. We play online, and the folks that are comfortable can play in person, and we're able to go back and forth pretty well. The issue, though, I think we run into is because we're a pretty active lodge, our games, our online games, will get filled up all the time by people outside the lodge. And so, you know, one of the things we try to do is for when a game first opens up is at least give our folks an opportunity, local folks, to sign up if they want. And then it gets opened up to the greater wide world. And, you know, we have probably one of the most awesomest GMs here, Jocelyn Hamilton, and her tables get filled in a waiting list every single game online. So how do you balance that? Or what's the appropriate balance for that? You know, trying to keep it local, but not exclusively local for online when you're doing this kind of hybrid thing.
Well, and that's the thing. And that's the big difference between games that are considered local versus games that you would consider a pickup game versus games that would really be more appropriate to be hosted through the online region, is what lens are you looking at it? Locally, we have, kind of similar to you guys, we have an exclusivity window. It's mm-hmm. we open up the games for this amount of time. If you are not one of our locals, and we've coordinated on Warhorn with using the ability to tag people. We've right. given local tags to those who we know are locals or those who we've spoken to. Because I've had a couple people go, hey, I know I don't game very often locally, but I am a local. So, and it's like, oh yeah, you can tell me this, you're good. So we have that exclusivity window as well, which we will open up near the end of signups. If mm-hmm. there are seats, just because, let's be honest, people would rather play at a table with four or five people than three. So mm-hmm. we will open those up on some tables if there's space near the end of the signup window. But for the most part, we just try to keep it exclusivity locked. Different regions have done different things. Different locals do different things. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot mm-hmm. of what works for you to entice your player base. Some places have switched off of Warhorn and use Meetup because they feel like it's easier to coordinate that mm-hmm. way. So
mm-hmm. now, is that okay to have that, you know, with organized play overall, to be excluding some people from online games? So that's whatever bylaws you have, that's not a conflict then?
It gets sticky because the thing is, if you open it up to the worldwide, as far as anyone can sign up, then it's no longer a local game. And so it's been a lot of discussion back and forth of being careful to not cross into the, this is just basically a closed home group line. Yeah, because at that point it's no longer like you're running organized play, but you're like you're running scenarios, but you're not really an open organized play game.
Right, right.
But at the same time, you still want your people who are within your region, within your city, to have that ability to be like, you know what? This is our home. We still want to play with our people who we would be able to see face to face. And so it's definitely a balancing act in order to keep it from becoming club exclusive. So like on our Warhorn, I think we have over 100 people who have the local tag because I went through every single sign up on our Warhorn and checked. And if people had ever played a physical game here, they got the local tag. So it was very much a process in order to try and keep it and then still communicating with players because people who've started playing during COVID may never have played a local game, but they could live 5 minutes down the street from me. And so there's a lot of, please communicate. If I missed you, talk to me, talk to one of our other venture officers type things. So it's I think communication is the big key of how to keep it moving without it becoming a closed off group to the point that it's no longer considered organized play.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that's a fair point. And I guess because I do some exclusive closed groups that we don't put on Warhorn or anything. And then I'm involved in local groups. And then I play with other lodges, you know, just as, you know, it's open to locals first and then other people. And I just kind of fill in there. So I can see the benefits of all three. And I just want to make sure that, well, I guess what we're doing is it acceptable behavior, you know, having it exclusive period, but it sounds like that's something that a lot of lodges do. So I think we're cool.
Yeah. It's basically at this point considered acceptable to give your locals that first shot. And honestly, it is the divider between what is considered a local game and what is something that, again, is more appropriate for the online region. If you're just scheduling at this point, if you're just scheduling games and they're open to everyone to sign up whenever they want, then it's a, do you need to look at it and maybe have your venture captain talk to Alex and reach out to online to talk about, is this still a local game or is this still something that's more appropriate being under online or being considered a pickup game as far as ACP type stuff. And so it's a lot of discussions that need to happen in individual groups.
Right. And that's going to vary on how active your local group is. So let's change gears a little bit. So how did you become a freelancer for Paizo? You know, can you talk about that journey? You've had some Pathfinder stuff and some Starfinder things. You know, I played your initial quest run by you, which was a lot of fun. And now you have this 412 scenario, a festive operation coming out, or just released last week. How did you get involved and how is this progression, I guess, kind of work for you?
Getting involved, I actually did some third-party work first, and I've still done some other third-party work. And then reaching out and making relationships with the devs at Paizo, getting to know people when we had in-person games, getting to meet people and know people at conventions and talking with them. And then once I had some other experience, starting just the process of contacting the people who I had relationships with and being like, hey, I have this experience, I have this, and I would really love to be able to try to write for society. And I was lucky in that Thurston Hillman and Jenny Jervinsky, sorry, Jenny, if I said that wrong.
I think it's Jerzabski.
Yeah. There you go. See, I am the world's worst person with names, and my students will admit this.
Me too. Oh, man. Yeah, as a teacher, first of all, I forget all their names. And then I say them wrong. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I give my kids, at the beginning of the year, I get a bag of Skittles. And every time I mess up their names, they have to learn to do it appropriately. So I'm also teaching them some social skills. But it's, okay, Miss Flanagan, you said my name wrong. Okay, you get Skittles. And it helps me learn to do it correctly. And so it's a fun little way. But anyway, so I'm digressing. Thurston and Jenny, I got lucky and they took a chance on me and let me do 311, the quest, which was so much fun because it's like, okay, right. Cool. You need to go rescue the honey badger, Defrex. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I think they look like honey badgers. And you have to go rescue it and not just kill it. Think of a way to get it back without just murdering the thing. And from there, I was lucky to be able to work with Thurston and Mike Kimmel to do the bounty that I got for Pathfinder. And then working with Jenny and Jessica Catalan on 412, which I am so excited for people to get to play the first Starfinder holiday special. Just saying, it is so much fun, and there are so many things in it that are just near and dear to my own heart in putting it together. So I'm hoping that people enjoy it.
Yeah, you know, no spoilers here because I'm going to be playing this. You're a huge Disney fan. Are there going to be Disney Easter eggs in this? Should I be looking for those?
Here's what I will say. Nothing is like an explicit Easter egg. However, my favorite movie of all time is Beauty and the Beast.
Okay.
And if you know that and you know me, you might be able to find something that is inspired by that love.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, that's what I was hoping for, is that there'd be something in there. Oh yeah, this is where this came from, you know, kind of ideas and be able to see that theme going through it. So cool. Very neat. So what advice do you have for people interested in getting involved in organized play, especially if they want to get involved in, you know, kind of leadership positions, and also if they want to go on to become freelancers?
As far as org play, the first thing that I would say is be willing. Talk to your local venture officers you already have. If you don't know who they are, you can reach out to your GMs, people you do know, and they will work to help you get in touch and just talk to them and be like, hey, I'm interested. Do you have a location that needs AVA support? So just a small location that you're working on organizing. And if you're already doing that, then you want to do more, step up, make it known, like, hey, I'm interested in doing more when there is space to move up. That is absolutely the way to do it, is to just be like, hey, I'm here. I want to do the thing and I'm willing to do the thing. That is probably the number one thing that I could tell people.
So in that regard, so I've been GMing for a bunch of years, but I do mostly Starfinder, and I declined to get involved as an adventure officer because I wasn't really playing a lot of Pathfinder and didn't feel it was appropriate to have somebody who was so skewed to one side organizing, you know, for a whole store or lodge, you know, for everything. Is that okay if you're very much one-sided in terms of adventure officer?
Especially if you're a VA and you're just organizing a single location, absolutely. It's just making sure you know that's your bias. And if your player base is like, hey, I want to also play this, then working to find somebody who's willing to GM it. The thing about being a VO is we have requirements for how many games we're supposed to run a month or what we're supposed to do. But it doesn't say specifically you must run games in X system. That being said, my personal opinion, not rules as written, if you are going to step up as a VL or a VC, because especially as a VC, you're making calls on and having to handle disputes as things that happen at the table, the higher up you move as a venture officer, I think that you should have at least knowledge and a good understanding of how the other systems work mm-hmm. and be engaged with them to a point. Mm-hmm. However, that also can come down to your local region. Like I said, that's my personal bias. It is not rules as written. So definitely a part of figuring out how things go back and forth and working with others in your area. We have stores here in Cincinnati that are exclusively one system or the other because that's what the store wanted. So mm-hmm. we have GMs who it's like, as a VA, they run Starfinder or they run Pathfinder. But then we also have places that are hybrid, and some of those have a VA who runs one system and then they work with a GM who runs the other. But the mm-hmm. VA is still the one coordinating the game, scheduling them, even though they are talking to those other GMs to be like, hey, what do your players want? Just keeping that knowledge and that pulse. So while, yes, you could do it being exclusively to one system, the more you move up, the more knowing the others, just because scheduling and understanding what people want and being able to be like, oh, yeah, you're a new player, I can help you with this, or I can help you find that resource. It's good to have that understanding of both.
Mm-hmm. I think
all of them, because there's two active but two retired. So,
mm-hmm. no, I think that's fair. Yeah, when several years ago, when our VL kind of stepped down, we had a void for a long time, and a couple of us just stepped in, and we just GM'd a lot, but never took on any active roles as venture officers. And then when the decision came, I encouraged other people to apply and become those positions. And now, you know, they're the VL and VCs of our area. And I basically just GM. I don't have any responsibility. This is one of the reasons why I'm interested in getting involved in organizing for conventions, because I think that's something I have a good, strong skill set for. And I've kind of missed out on the whole VA, VL, VC bandwagon. And then it's like, you know, I'm happy organizing and running games. I don't think I need any other additional administrative assistance for that. So
totally 100% understand. And that is honestly going back to that application process for this year and looking at it with a blind eye. That is a big reason as to why we are doing the recruiting for those positions in a different way than they've been done in the past, and doing mm-hmm. it through this application that we're going to review blind, is because by virtue of the way things have worked in the past, if to get into one of the organizing committees or get into the positions, you would have to know somebody already on that in that committee or be recommended to them.
Right.
And so because of that process, and it be working in such a way, it leads to a VO heavy thing, especially with like VCs, VLs, and people higher. But then we have people like David Beaver, who are not a traditional venture officer, who are great with the position and the convention that they're doing. So seeing him and some of the team on Gen Con who aren't your traditional venture officers, but also are doing great, as well as knowing that there are other people out there who are interested, who may or may not be on that knowledge-based radar, trying to change it to a more open application to give people the opportunity, like yourself, who are like, you know, I'm not a venture officer. I just run games, but this is something that I have the skill set and I could be interested in. And so giving people that opportunity to put their name out there, to put their experience out there and say, hey, you may not see me, but I think I'm good for you.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's a great opportunity. That's one of the things, you know, I know David, and he actually, I mentioned to him before, yeah, I'm kind of interested in, you know, when we have these conventions again in person, helping out. And he said, oh yeah, well, you know the process and you know who to ask and kind of thing. And so I'm glad to see it's going to be like transparent and blind now in terms of how it happens. So I think that's great. All right. What's next for Ivis?
As far as what?
I don't know. What kind of cool things are you working on that maybe you could talk about? So are you doing any, you said you do some third party stuff. You do some, maybe some Paizo stuff coming down that's coming out and something that's been announced, or, you know, even, you know, work at conventions and coming up.
All right. Convention stuff is, we're starting to start ramping up PaizoCon, and mm-hmm. getting excited, working out details, ironing them out with Alex, and definitely looking forward to when we are able to give more of that information out. But right now, mm-hmm. I can tell you it's Memorial Day weekend.
Yes. Yes. Excellent.
That, and that we're trying to be hybrid. Those are the yeah. pieces of information that are solid at this point.
So should I go book my virtual hotel there in the DoubleTree?
I am being optimistic and saying yes, because okay. I think we will be, with the different things we've been discussing as far as safety procedures and mechanisms to mm-hmm. have a safe event with COVID. Also, I've been involved in some smaller events locally that we've had COVID procedures in place to keep people safe, and they seem to be working. So I am cautiously optimistic that hybrid is going to happen. As far as writing, there is one thing that I have permission to share, because okay, I double checked. So this year's Wayfinder, mm-hmm. with Wayfinder, they always have the adventure as part of the magazine when it releases. And for this year, myself and Mike Bramnick, we were selected to write the adventure for this year's Wayfinder. So we're working on getting that polished to share with
nice.
Everyone.
Excellent. Very excellent. Great to see both of you involved with that. So many people have gotten their start through Wayfinder, and I know both of you got your start before. I don't know if Mike's stuff has been announced or not, but yeah, that's exciting.
Actually, last Wednesday when 4.12 came out, yeah. we also had the release of the last of the level one Pathfinder bounties, and that was Mike's. So
excellent.
If people want to go and experience a fun little trek through the jungle, they should definitely go check that out.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Ivis, thanks so much for chatting with me. It's been great getting to know you. Thanks for coming on the podcast today.
Well, thank you for having me.